He plays Among Us, bam, 1.5 million, 2 million. Literally overnight went from 100 to 200K views a video to 1.5 to 2 million views every single video. It is insane.
Guys, welcome back to Watch Time. This week on the podcast, we are talking Among Us and the absolute blow up that has taken over YouTube. We're talking about The Social Dilemma, the Netflix documentary that's taken over Netflix, and we are talking about the H3H3 Keemstar drama. Would you use the word, Elliot?
Stealing
of merch designs. But first, we're going to be talking about Quibi. Quibi is reportedly for sale. But Elliot, it's just us on the podcast this week. I feel like it's been a few weeks since it's just been you and me.
Yeah, I know. We've just been interviewing everyone and talking to everyone and getting everyone's backstories.
I'd be really interested to know what you guys prefer, though, whether you like the chats where we're talking about current events, just me and Elliot, or if you like the ones where we have guests on the show. A combo of both. Let us know if you're watching on YouTube in the comments or the comments on Apple Podcasts, because I would be curious to know. But how's your week been, Elliot? What have you been up to?
My week's been good. I've just been like absolutely smashing through streaming. Like I guess, like, you know, which we're talking about later, like Among Us came out and there's been like some really good Fortnite updates recently. So I've actually been like enjoying kind of playing games for like 7-8 hour stints. Like, don't get me wrong, always love playing games, but streams is like different because you need to be hard on committed for like 6-7 hours at a time if you want to do a proper one.
Yeah.
So like it's a good sign when you can play for like 7 or 8 hours and you're not like clock watching, you know? You're not being like, oh,
yes.
How has this only been 2 hours? I feel like I've been here forever.
Living the dream.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. So it's been really good. I've just been mainly streaming.
Well, for those of you watching on YouTube, guys, I have a wine on the podcast this week because it's been one of those weeks. It's Wednesday when we're recording. It's a day late that the podcast is going live this week because we've had a bit of a manic few days.
I was just going to say quickly, I think it's funny that like because of your time zone, it's nighttime for you. You're on the wines and it's morning for me and I'm on the coffee.
We had Fresh, who's one of the talent that I represent. He just recently, this morning, came out with a collaboration with Lil Tecca, who is an up-and-coming rapper. So we did a merch collaboration between Fresh and Tecca to celebrate Tecca's new album that he just released. And it was so cool. Like, I love working on campaigns that are a little bit different than what we normally do. And I think it's super exciting to see more and more that intersection between like gaming and music and fashion and pop culture. And I feel like anytime we get to work on a project like that, I get super excited about it because I just see how quickly this industry is developing and the direction that it's moving in and how it's only getting bigger and more mainstream. And yeah, I love it. I feel super energized by it. But at the same time, it's been a few late nights, so a wine is in order tonight.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. I think like every time, it's one of those weird things where obviously gaming is huge and it really probably shouldn't be a shock as much to people. But every time one of these like big collabs happen, I think it's just a really cool way of, you know, kind of like makes people feel a lot more like, I don't know, that gaming's legitimate. I don't know if that makes sense.
Totally.
But I feel like gaming's always been, or not always, it's definitely changing very rapidly now. But, you know, when a lot of like people, you know, our age were at school, if you were like playing games or playing World of Warcraft or doing something like that, like you would keep that so hush hush. Like you'd be like, oh yeah, boys, how about the footy on the weekend, hey? Like the cricket, pretty good. Like definitely didn't sit inside playing Call of Duty for 17 hours. Like, whereas these days, you know, people will go to school and they're like, oh, bro, my KD ratio, unreal right now. Absolutely slaying it. And like, and that's become way more of a thing. So I think, you know, when you see mainstream musicians like Drake and Ninja and Lil Tecca and doing this thing with Fresh, like I think that's really, really cool.
It's super cool. And you know what's an interesting insight is whenever I do these collaborations or I work on more mainstream brand activations, I will oftentimes get a comment when the content goes live, and it happened 3 times this morning where someone from the record label, someone from the merchandise company, and someone from Tecca's team, who's a father, they all messaged and they were just like, whoa, my kids just saw this and like commented how cool it is that we're doing something with Fresh. And you can tell that like for the adult the adults, for like the people organizing these collaborations or like on the brand side, oftentimes they probably don't appreciate how big it is. And it's not until they get that like vote of confidence from their kids saying like, hey dad, that was sick, or like, hey mom, that was like a great work thing that you did. I love that, because I just feel like kids are the ones that have their finger on the pulse with everything pop culture. Yeah. So if you've got their seal of approval, you're doing something right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time it's a blind spot for, you know, a lot of people doing marketing, because that kind of like gaming is just, it's just something that if you're not in it, it kind of is just very confusing, I think, totally. From an outsider. Like, what do you mean you watch people play video games? Just go play the video games yourself, you know? Like, a lot of people, I just don't think, connect on that. So I think, having kids as like a sounding board a lot of the time is actually really, really valuable.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, let's talk Quibi, Elliot. So Jeffrey Katzenberg, oh, who's the CEO of Quibi.
Endless source of content. I feel like we just beat down on Quibi like once a month with a stick. It's like your monthly how bad is Quibi doing kind of check-in.
For those of you that maybe haven't listened to any of our previous episodes where we've talked about Quibi, Quibi is a quick bites entertainment platform similar to a YouTube or Netflix, but it's premium, it's subscription-based, and it launched in April, and it really struggled from the start. They launched right at the height of the coronavirus pandemic, and this is a platform that was meant for consuming entertainment in between sort of break periods in the day. So imagine when you're on the bus to work, or you're on the train home, or you're in between meetings or something like that, which obviously those moments were completely lost during the pandemic because everyone was at home. Katzenberg is the CEO. He did an interview with the New York Times in June where he attributed everything that had gone wrong with the launch of the app to the coronavirus and emphasized everything that had gone wrong he attributed to the coronavirus, which Elliot and I have our own opinions on. But they've basically really struggled to recover over the last 6 months. They reportedly raised $1.75 billion before they launched the app, and apparently they have churned through $1 billion of that as of now.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. There are rumors, unconfirmed, that they are exploring strategic options for a sale.
Give me $1 billion. Give me $1 billion. I'll find something cooler to do. All right. And probably, shockingly, even with no understanding of how to do any of this stuff, I'll probably still lose less money than they will on Quibi. But I don't know.
1,000%. It's hard to lose $1 billion. That's a billion with a B.
it was, I don't know. It was always like super interesting to me. Like the whole concept just seemed quite out of touch. I don't actually know. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I think it was a cool, interesting take. And obviously, if you want to like really get traction, and every big idea a lot of the time like sounds dumb when it first gets suggested. Do you remember, So not to get off topic, do you remember Apple, like the earbuds when they first came out? Like the wireless earbuds. And everyone was like, imagine wearing wireless earbuds. You would look like the biggest loser in the world. And like
1,000%.
And for a few months, everyone was like laughing at people who wore them. I was laughing at Grace all the time. But now, I'm not even kidding. Yesterday, I couldn't find my wireless earbuds. I had to put wired earbuds in. And I looked in the mirror and I was like, oh my God, I look like the biggest idiot right now. And that is in the space of like a year. That changed in the space of 1 to 2 years. So don't get me wrong. I could be wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong on Quibi. I just think it was, obviously from the start, we've always said, what is this? Like, what are you doing? Obviously, very kind of like short on the go content, 7 minute episode style stuff. It just seemed like it was trying to fix a problem that wasn't there, you know, like being like, oh, you need to be able, like a lot of the videos, like, oh, we need to be able to watch them in vertical. I'm like, look, I got to be honest. I don't really care about holding my phone like that versus that. Mm-hmm. It's not a difference. And this is a much better viewing experience. And as for like their whole idea of, well, you know, if you got like 5 to 7 minutes between meetings, that's such a niche kind of situation where you're waiting 5 to 7 minutes between meetings. And also, I'll just watch the next 7 minutes of whatever episode of TV or movie I'm watching, and then I'll resume it later. I don't know. Long story short, I can't really say I'm surprised. I would be super interested. I think what's interesting to me is now that it's gone out to market and it's kind of, you know, actually been a proven failure, so to say, so to speak, is what would it get valued at? If they do another round of funding or if they do sell it, what is that round of funding and that sale going to value the company at? Because
exactly, you don't want to go backwards on that.
Well, I think they're definitely going to go backwards. There's no way that anything that they've done could be considered like an increase in value, right?
I think they had a small win last week where they won 2 Emmys for a show that they produced and created. But I think that's, yeah, I think.
How many billions of dollars do you get for each Emmy? Is it a billion per Emmy or is that, oh no, okay, so they're still losing a shitload of money? All right, cool, interesting.
I think that's a really good way that you summed it up, Elliot. I think saying that it was trying to solve a problem that didn't exist is exactly right. For me, I think there's a number of problems that I keep coming back to. And to be honest, this segment is a reminder for me that I still haven't cancelled my subscription that I got when they were doing the 3-month free trial. And I haven't either.
Doing that right now.
But for me, I think there was a couple of key problems. I think one, they were trying to produce high-end content in a short-form format. And I don't know if that works. For me, it feels like they were trying to take like a YouTube content or TikTok content and make it really highly produced. And I feel like when you're trying to get through to an audience and you've only got under 10 minutes to permeate that, it requires a level of rawness. And I think that's why YouTube content does so well in that. Like,
agree.
5 to 10 to 15 minute thing is because immediately you're able to connect with the viewer. There is only the camera between like you and me if you're watching us on YouTube right now. Like there is no producer. We have an editor that helps, but it's just us. And you're able to hear me and Elliot have a conversation in raw form right now. I don't know if people want makeup artists and costume departments and producers and directors and honestly, $1 million budgets. I don't think people want it. And then the other issue is that it is a subscription platform. And it's a subscription platform with ads, even if you're paying for it. TikTok, obviously, and these platforms serve ads, but they're free. And I just feel like it's not able to compete with that.
And I think what else is super interesting is that, at least from what I saw of the show, like a lot of them were kind of, it didn't really feel like they'd created content that was supposed to exist in 7-minute blocks. It felt like they literally made normal TV a lot of the time, like normal TV shows with like full narratives, and then they just cut them up into 7-minute episodes. Whereas like for me,
which was, I think, actually one of their strategies was like movies in short bites, but again, right. It's like, what actually is creative about that?
But exactly, yeah. then that doesn't solve the issue of it being a bite-sized bit of content, because then you want to keep watching and keep watching. You may as well be watching a full movie and just pausing it every 7 minutes when you go into your next meeting. I think for me, like, what makes YouTube the, like, undefeated king of bite-sized 7 to 10 minute bits of content is if I've got 7 minutes, I don't want to watch 5% of an overall movie and then have to like pause it and then go into my next meeting. What I want to do is go and watch slow-mo guys blow something up in ridiculously short, like, you know, in ridiculous slow
Elliot
frame rate stuff.
Slow-mo guys.
I just like, I'm saying that there's like, there's better bite-sized content.
Agree.
Almost every 7 to 10 minute video that you watch on YouTube, whether you're watching something that's just like quickly explaining some really interesting concept, whether it's a Kyrgyzstan video, whether it's slow-mo guys blowing something up, whether it's your boy Mizo copping a cheeky Vic Roy in Fortnite Battle Royale. The point is, all that content is supposed to exist as a 7 to 10 minute bit of content. Ultimately, all Quibi's done is create 1 to 2 hour bits of content and then cut it up. And I mean, look, I know I'm oversimplifying it. I know it's not that bad. But I think a pretty interesting quote was from Katzenberg, the founder, where he was saying, did we get the avalanche of people that we wanted and were going out for at launch? The answer is no. It's not up to what we wanted. It's not even close to what we wanted. Like, I feel like when you're the, like, you know, early on, he was fully in denial. He was like, oh, no, it's going to be fine. Like, this is all coronavirus's fault. I feel like now him saying, yeah, it's pretty bad. Like, this is a guy who's been in denial for months now. The fact that he's finally actually able to come to terms with that, I think, is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Mr. Beast commenting a little bit on Twitter when this news broke earlier this week, talking about how he and his manager, Reed, went to Quibi early on and were trying to pitch shows that he could do. And I mean, I think he's a perfect example of what you're talking about, where he's creating short form content that is designed to be short form content, which is still storytelling. And I think that's really interesting. We also actually a couple months ago had a potential thing that we were doing with Quibi in a one way or another. I'm going to keep that really vague. It didn't end up working out. I liked the idea that they had, but they, you know what, to me, it just feels like, and I hate to say it, it kind of feels like boomers trying to break into a like Gen X, Y, Z generation. And I don't think it was done well. And even now, you know, people on Twitter saying, oh, Mr. Beast, like, come in and save it, like, buy it and do it yourself. I don't even know if that's a good outcome. Like, he doesn't need to do that. He's got YouTube. I think he's,
yeah.
And I feel like, again, it's like, it would be trying to solve a problem that doesn't currently exist. It will be interesting, I think, now that it's been a failure in many definitions, to see if they are trying to sell it, what they're actually going to sell it for, who would buy it, what they would do with it, whether or not they would actually try to turn around the app or just take some of the tech that they've developed and do something with it. But I don't see it being a super happy outcome for Quibi.
I feel like if the tech industry has taught me anything, though, it's that it doesn't matter how much of a failure or how much it looks like something is absolutely going into the dirt and losing money, there is always some big company willing to spend $1 billion to acquire it. I don't understand it. But no. But do you remember which one really amazed me? And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong here for not fully understanding it. Do you remember the Beam, the app that Casey and I sat started? Was a total failure. I think it literally got fully scrapped and wrapped up and turned into dust. And it got bought.
Yeah.
Was it by, it wasn't by CNN. It was by some big...
Yeah, it was.
It was CNN?
Yeah.
CNN bought it. And then they mothballed it. I just don't understand it. Like, you can start an app, it can completely fail, but if it says, oh, hip social media on it, companies will pay for it. I don't know.
I think they were buying the team behind it because they thought that the team itself had value. But I agree. It's really interesting.
Then offer them all individual contracts. Okay, maybe I just don't understand this stuff. I'm going
time
insane.
Time will tell.
I'm going to start an app and I'm going to sell it for $1 billion. And it's going to do it's going to do nothing and it's going to fail. And that's why it's going to succeed when it goes on the market.
Back to stock market lessons with Muzelk. All right, next part of the podcast, we're talking about James Charles and Ethan from H3H3. Elliot, did you see this on Twitter? Basically, James Charles announced his new line of merch this week. It looked apparently quite similar to a line of merch that Ethan and Hila had done with their Teddy Fresh line a few months ago.
No. It's their core collection.
Ethan was not happy. He went to Twitter and basically said that it was a little too close for comfort. James quickly responded saying that Ethan had DM'd him the day before and James had tried to keep it in the DMs and resolve it there. Ethan was not happy with or satisfied with that response. And it divided people across the internet. Some people saying that they didn't invent the style of color blocking merch that they were talking about, and other people saying that, yeah, it was a little too close to be a coincidence. What did you think, Elliot?
I can definitely see why they care. It's their like core collection. It's their brand, you know? And I think, once again, it wasn't like a once-off design they did. That's literally like, that's the hoodie that they are known for. That's like their brand as a whole. And ultimately, like a lot of the time, if you have like your brand and then someone comes in and literally copies it, that the person who came in and copied it is seen as like ripping it off. But when you've got a brand as big as James Charles coming in and ripping it off, you risk the narrative kind of shifting in the other direction. People knowing James Charles is primarily, and then kind of seeing Teddy Fresh as the kind of ripoff brand of James Charles, the narrative getting confused and all that going wrong. Mm. I definitely see why they care. I also do, like, I thought about it for a while because, once again, that it's been thrown around a lot. Like, they don't own color blocking. Absolutely true. But I think the more I was looking at the design, I like saw the initial photo and then I scrolled down and like I saw like the full image And I was just like, oh God, like every single part of this hoodie is identical. Like other than the fact that it puts sisters in the, like in varsity mm-hmm. font here and instead of the Teddy Fresh logo, every other part of it was identical. Like each sleeve, even the down to the trim on the sleeve, like down to the individual coloring of like the cuff. I think it was pretty, but almost like it was so blatant, it made me wonder, like, how, like, it, was it actually an accident, you know? Like, I feel like if you're copying someone, most of the time,
yeah.
you'd change it up a little bit, you know? you'd be like, ooh.
At least, like, switch up something.
You know, you're conscious of it, and you're like, ooh, okay, like, we don't, you know, we've done it, but, like, let's do some little changes to throw them off. They didn't do anything. It is a like light blue sleeve here, yellow cuff, dark blue, pink, yellow cuff, yellow hood. It is identical. And I think
Pop will put it up on the screen. Pop, if we can get a side by side of both, that would be great.
Yeah. It's like it's 1-to-1. Even down to the like shade of that light blue on the arm, it is identical. And I think, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think that they were definitely justified in kind of being like, hey. What the fuck?
See, I kind of disagree. I agree it was pretty similar, and perhaps James Charles's merch team took some
pretty
inspiration
similar.
From it, and maybe
pretty
they should have raised that. But I'm going to push back on the fact that it has negative implications for Ethan and Teddy Fresh. I think this is actually probably great. For them.
Oh,
I think
for sure.
It allows them to do a few tweets. It allows them to get a few thousand comments and retweets. And I think like all of these tweets that Ethan was doing had like minimum 20,000 likes on them to 60,000 likes. I think it puts them back into the public conversation. It puts their merch brand into the public conversation. And I would say straight up, I don't think that James Charles and Ethan have much of a crossover of audience. I don't think that the people that are buying James's merch would have bought Teddy Fresh's merch and vice versa. I think this is probably great for Ethan. I think it means that his audience gets to have an opinion about something. They get to feel like they're supporting someone they care about. They're probably going to go buy it to say like, Ethan, don't stress. We got your back. And I think it's all happy days, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, no, 100%. Like, this has definitely been a good thing for them, but it was only a good thing for them because they made it out to not be a good thing for them, if that makes
totally.
Sense, you know? Like, the value comes from the controversy
outrage.
and the drama and the outrage. And I think that, I don't know, it's interesting. It's, like, I think the bigger debate is, you know, is James Charles, like, I think the more interesting thing is, do you think James Charles dealt with it right? Because I read through, I'm very 50-50. I was actually like at 90%. Like, I think James Charles, when Ethan messaged, like his response was pretty like okay. But then there was like, oh, there was just one line in his DMs where I was like, oh, James, like you almost had it. You almost had that. You almost dealt with it classily, but then you couldn't, could you? And it was like, he was like, oh, you know, like absolutely, man. Like it looks like my design team might've, you know, I personally wasn't across this, but looks like my design team might've gotten some inspiration from your brand and copied it, which is 100% not okay. Going to message them and look into it. I was like, okay, this is, we're going on a good track here. And then he was like, but you don't own Colorblock either. And then it went down. And I was like, okay, dude, like you've just admitted it's a ripoff. They know they don't own Colorblock, but like you've also just admitted it was an exact stylistic ripoff. Like, you know, like when it's just like a little bit of like a backhanded apology or like a backhand, you know, anything backhand, that's what it had. And I guarantee you that is the line that made Ethan go, I'm gonna tweet this real quick, you know, like,
yeah,
because 100%. But like, and yeah. I think there was also another tweet that Hila made, which was in James Charles's DMs. In like one message, he's like, "Hey, I actually have never seen your brand before and don't know anything about it." And literally in the next message, he's like, "But also, our brands have no crossover." So it's like, he's like, I don't know who the fuck you are. I don't know what your brand is. But then he's also like, but also we have zero brand crossover. I understand enough about our markets.
No stress.
Which, you know,
anyway,
once again,
I think this is good outcomes for everyone.
Everybody wins scenario. Everyone's winning. Everyone
won. They're all happy.
Their bank accounts copped a big dub.
All right, Elliot, Among Us. This is a game that has taken over YouTube. If you watch gaming content on YouTube or Twitch the last couple weeks, you couldn't have avoided this. Every massive YouTuber in the game has been playing it. But it's unbelievable that this is a two-year-old game, Elliot, that I believe at the moment I saw has just one developer working on it. And I think that's amazing. It's like a happy story for me. I love hearing that. But give me your breakdown as a creator that's been playing it. Why is it doing so well?
It's just like, for live streamers especially, it's just, I'm a little bit surprised it's doing as well as it is on for like YouTube videos. But
yeah,
I definitely think for live streaming, it's pretty obvious why it does so well. It's just so much good banter, such good narrative. Like, it's such a great way to get a bunch of big YouTubers and streamers all together, playing the same thing, chatting with each other, just doing dumb stuff. Honestly, the game is just fun as well. Like, I always measure how much fun I'm having in a game at a time by like how quickly time flies when I'm live streaming. Sometimes, like, if I'm on a good day of Fortnite, you know, like, I'll blast through 4 hours like it's nothing. Other times, I feel like I've been playing for like a day, and then I look down, it's like, you've been live for 45 minutes, and I'm like, oh. But Among Us, we did a stream the other day with like a bunch of the, you know, YouTube live streamers. And I remember I was like, okay, like, cool. Yeah, we've been playing, like, done a couple of games. And I looked down, it's like, you've been live for 5 hours. And I was like, whoa, okay, Jesus. Yeah, I think it's just one of those games where every match plays out differently. There's so much variety. There's so many like funny moments to be had through whether you're an imposter or whether you're trying to hunt an imposter down or whether you're just walking along and you just see someone stab someone in front of you and you're like, bro, come on. Like, what is this?
And there have been particular creators that have been blowing up on it. I always find this fascinating when a new game comes on the scene and the people that jump on it early and are creating great content can just, they can reap the rewards in a scale that they have never before.
But it's not only that, it's also that, even if people jumped on it early or whether they're just jumping on it now, I think, yeah, what I've found most interesting is just like, looking at what is working versus what is like what it works super well for some channels and not well for others. I think Courage is a good example. Courage and Valkyrie, the other two two of the big gaming YouTube streamers. And, you know, pre Among Us, if they were doing a stream, you know, if they're, you know, I know Courage sometimes streams like World of Warcraft and he'll have 1,000 to 2,000 viewers. If he's playing a game that he's more known for, he might have, I think, like 6,000 to 7,000, maybe 8,000 viewers. Apologies if I'm getting that wrong. But if he plays Among Us right now, he's pulling 40, 50K viewers. Easy.
Amazing.
Literally growing by 10 to 20,000 subscribers a day playing Among Us. Meanwhile, contrast that with me, Lockie Lannan. You know, so Lockie and I normally say like between 20 and 30,000 viewers if we're playing Fortnite. Lannan probably around like 80. Whereas if we play Among Us, you know, like for Courage, he literally, his viewership almost goes up by 10 times the viewership. Me and Lockie will go from, you know, say 20 to 30 on Fortnite down to like 10 to 12 on Among Us. Like, our viewership goes down. And I know Lannan's goes down a bit as well. And our YouTube videos don't do as well as Fortnite videos. But then meanwhile, contrast, to go back to the point you were saying, Mr. Fruit, who's a channel that I've known for a while. He and I've kind of like, I always like dip back in and watch his stuff. And it seems like whenever a new game comes out, he dips into it and he does really well, but then he just stops playing them after a while. I remember him and Fortnite had a similar thing. It was like a light
going
switch.
Going bananas.
It was a light switch. He was on, you know, maybe getting between 100 and 200K views a video, I think, on average in the first like 24 hours. To suddenly, he plays Among Us, bam, 1.5 million, 2 million. Literally overnight went from 100 to 200K views a video to 1.5 to 2 million views every single video. It is insane. It's actually it's one of the most, I think what's interesting is a lot of the time when a new game comes out and when a smaller view channel jumps on it, what you see a lot of the time is very rapid growth. You know, they're getting 100, 200K. Then the next week, they're getting 300, 400K per video. Then 7, 8 million. And, you know, it builds up. It's like it can be a very rapid growth ramp. But what amazed me about Mr. Fruit and the Among Us content is it was literally overnight. Like, it was like 200K, 2 million. Just light switch immediately on. Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
So what would be your advice to any smaller creators when a new game comes out? Would you say, like, it's definitely, that was what they did well? Like a Mr. Fruit, a Disguised Toast, whose channel's also completely blowing up right now off Among Us content. Do you think it's just, like, making sure that you're trying new things, you're not getting stuck in your ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard thing is when it's a game that, obviously, like, new games are the ones that always do really well, right? They're the ones that always kind of pop off. And they're the best way to kind of, like, get growth on a channel is you need to find a game that's kind of, like, blowing up and ride that train up. But yeah, it's also super hard because everyone's playing the game, you know? Like, obviously, like, it's a lot more saturated on YouTube. I think the thing you just got to do is find ways to kind of make your content on that game, but make it differently to everyone else. So you kind of carve out your own niche, or you have your own way to stand out among everyone else. Because otherwise, it's very easy to blend in.
Yeah, I love to see it. I mean, it's so good. It just keeps everyone on their toes, and it makes you realize that no one can ever get too comfortable. And even if you're having a tough time, like, you never know what's around the corner. You really don't.
100%.
Okay, on the topic of social media, Elliot, have you watched The Social Dilemma?
No, I haven't. It kept popping. I literally, when you said you wanted to talk about it today, I was like, oh, that's that thing that literally is permanently now at the top of my Netflix suggested and it won't go away. I literally, you know when you feel, you know when YouTube just keeps giving you the same suggested video for like 6 months?
Yes.
And you're like, fine, YouTube, I'll watch it. All right? Just
you win.
Get it away. Literally that, but with that freaking show.
It was amazing. I highly recommend it.
Really?
It's scary. It's not a feel-good movie. You'll come away from it being like,
documentary
shit.
Or movie?
Documentary. And it interviews a number of the top previous execs and people that worked at the big social media companies and examines just basically the impact that social media has on our lives, the addiction it forms in a lot of people, and algorithm and how that is basically just growing at a rate that we can't keep up on. But I think we should have a conversation about that when you've watched it. But if you've watched it,
I'm
let
not
me
addicted
know
to
comments.
Social media. I don't know what you mean. I can
Dude,
quit anytime.
Elliot is addicted. To the people at home, Elliot is addicted.
I'm not addicted
he
at all.
He gets very anxious if he is without his phone.
I do. But also it's weird. Like, I'm not, I'm addicted to, like, I think it's more I'm like ADHD. Like, I need, I constantly need stuff to be fed into me. But I wouldn't say I'm addicted to social media, because I would say, like, I'm more addicted to Reddit and browsing memes
Dude,
all the time.
Dude, you gotta go but, watch this. This is going to blow your mind.
But what I was going to say is, like, the reason I don't think I'm addicted to social media is because, like, for a YouTuber, Instagram, social influencer, I post on Instagram, like, only when I absolutely have to. Like, someone has to twist my arm behind my back and be like, you need to do this right now before I will ever, you know, kind of actually, you know, make a post. Like, yeah. I'm pretty bad.
All right. Well, guys, I think that about sums it up for today. Leave a comment, subscribe if you are watching on YouTube, or subscribe if you're listening on Spotify or Apple. It really helps us out and makes sure that people get to see the podcast that wouldn't have otherwise. But thank you so much for watching this week of Watch Time. We will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.